Welcome to everyone listening all around the world, all across the United States. We're coming to you live from the City of Angels, the center of the known universe. That is the Coast to Coast AM studios right here in Los Angeles, California. I'm your host for the weekend, Jimmy Church. And it's great to be back here on Coast with all of you. I've been busy out there working on some television stuff and did a couple of things around the country. And we just got back from spending the weekend in Roswell, New Mexico, for their UFO festival. And I've got to give a big shout out to the city. Everybody in Roswell gave myself and Clyde Lewis such a warm welcome. We both broadcasted throughout the week without a single technical issue. And I got to say, it was just great. The people out there in Roswell are absolutely wonderful. And next year, we've got to get George out there for the 70th anniversary. And I want to give a big shout out to the Balboa High School Class of 81 reunion going on right now in Florida. I can't be there, and I wish I was, and I miss Panama every single day. So you guys have a good time. But after disengaging from the news and the world for, you know, 4 or 5 days that we were out there in Roswell, I get back to reality, and it seemed that everything around us for this past week was just doing its best to unwind us all, testing us all, finishing with, of course, the tragic event in Dallas, Texas. And for me, I'm not going to give in. We all must think positive. We have to. So tonight, we're going to go off planet. Listen to the bumper music tonight. It's time to disconnect, because there is something going on up there, out there, all around us. We're going to go old school tonight. This is going to be a full-on UFO type of evening, and I have personally seen things in the sky, and I often wonder, are we tracking these things? We have the best radar, the best satellites and telescopes and staff and people. Officially, what are we doing about it? I ask myself this all the time. Well, later in the show, we're going to speak with Clifford Stone, a good friend and someone who over the years has gathered more information on the subject of tracking UFOs than just about anyone I can think of. And my first guest tonight is Victor Vigiani, who back on June 25th of last month revealed NORAD tracking documents and a letter that was sent to him from NORAD in December 2015. Those documents are posted on the Coast to Coast website. You can go there right now. It says Victor Vigiani's secret documents. You can click on it and review them throughout the show tonight. Because sometimes we need to unplug from the machine. And right now we will. Yes, the studio is dark. It's just you and me and this microphone. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. And just to give you a heads up, tomorrow is Nikola Tesla's birthday. And we're going to have a little party for him on Coast. And my guest will be tomorrow night, Andrew Bishago, Mark Seifer, and Tim Eaton. You can follow me right now on Twitter at JChurchRadio for any questions or comments during the show. I do keep Twitter running in real time to my left. And I'll be right back with my first guest, Victor Vigiani. All right, welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, for the weekend. Tonight, we're going to do all UFOs all the time. We're going old school. And tomorrow is Nikola Tesla's birthday. And we're going to do a nice birthday celebration tomorrow night. So come back and join us. But tonight, it's old school UFOs. And Victor Vigiani has a Bachelor of Arts degree in Sociology and Psychology and a Master's in Educational Administration and Curriculum Development. Victor's research and analysis of anomalous aerial phenomena has spanned over 30 years. His experience involves UFO sightings, report investigation, counseling work, and journalism with ET Disclosure. His extensive UFO research has been completed throughout the southwestern United States in locations such as Groom Lake, Nevada, Corona, Roswell, Socorro, the Very Large Array Telescope, White Sands, Los Alamos, Dulce, and also Australia. His website is zlandcommunications.blogspot.com. I would like to welcome back to Coast Victor Vigiani. Victor, how you doing tonight, sir?
Just fine, Jimmy. Great to be with you.
It's great to have you on. And earlier this week, well, let's back up, Victor, if we may, back to June 25th when the disclosure of the documents officially kicked off. What's your world been like for the last couple of weeks?
Well, it's been rather tumultuous, to say the least, Jimmy. I can't tell you. I'm not quite sure exactly what size my website is in terms of the amount of hits that it can take. But I've received well over 35,000 new hits since June 25th, and it's growing by the day. In addition to that, I'm receiving emails from literally all over the world, from the UK, from Australia, and different parts of Europe, requesting the documents and asking questions about why I did what I did and why I said what I said. So it has been, to say the least, rather tumultuous.
When you first received the documents, and I want the Coast audience all to go to Coast to Coast AM, and right there on the homepage, you can just click on Victor's documents there. And there's four documents that we are presenting tonight. Two of them are NORAD tracking documents, and they're stamped secret. And then one is a letter from NORAD that Victor received back in December. We're going to focus on that tonight, too, as well. And then the fourth document is a letter from the Royal Mounted Police, the RCMP, back in 1968, I think is the date on the letter. And we'll talk about that later on in the show. But for the audience, you need to kind of go and open up these documents and review them so you understand how complex and how important what these documents are, but it's what they say. And I think that's very important here. When you first received the letter, Victor, back in December, what went through your mind when you read it the first time? Because I know you read it a second, third, fourth, and fifth time. But your first pass through the letter, it was shocking to me, but it was sent to you. What went through your mind?
Well, it was like a bullet going through my mind, basically. It was, speaking metaphorically, of course, but it just literally stunned me, Jimmy. I just could not imagine that that kind of verbiage would be used directed at an individual, indicating that information that I had in my possession that had already been given to me by NORAD several years earlier was now in a position to represent a breach of national security and a breach of the espionage laws in the United States. I read the paragraph that contains that verbiage, that wording. I read it several times, and I literally could not believe what I was reading. And it seems that the United States government or NORAD or whoever's in charge of the coterminous operations that the United States and Canada operates, why they would retroactively indicate to me that information that I already had in my own possession that they had given me was now in some way, shape, or form a violation of national security and espionage laws. And I read it, and I read it, and I read it, and I spoke with my solicitor about it. And there's really only one conclusion that I came to, was that the information that I had and still have, and that I have distributed in the past and distributed officially at the hearing back on June 25th, that was a violation of those particular national security and espionage laws. There's no other way that I can interpret that, because they actually use the word tracks of interest and unknown tracks, and possession of anything using that nomenclature is a violation of national security. And so I guess the only conclusion that I came to is that I in some way violated those national security laws, and I dared the United States government to come after me and charge me with espionage.
Well, and I understand the challenge. And what's interesting in the letter is not only do they mention the Espionage Act, but they specifically mention the media and revealing this information to the media. Now, you challenge them to come after you, which I understand. And so earlier this week, you were on my show, Fade to Black, and that was taking it up one notch. And now tonight, here you are on Coast to Coast challenging the government to come after you And it specifically says the media there. Certainly, Coast to Coast, it doesn't get bigger than this show. Are you prepared, Victor, to be a martyr for the cause?
Well, and in one sense, I'm totally prepared for it. And the reason that I'm prepared for it, Jimmy, is if anything does happen, if any litigation were to transpire, I'm fully prepared for that. The reason that I'm prepared for it is because as soon as it does occur, if it does occur, the cat will be out of the bag, will be in a court of law. And if, in fact, that does happen, I will begin my defense if they do indict me on that, if they do charge me with anything related to this particular document or the documents that I have. I will ask the court's permission to read approximately 16,000 different UFO files or different pieces of information that I have and we have at our disposal at Z-Land Communications, and we'll read them all into the record, into the court of law. And I know in your own defense you can do those kinds of things, and I'm fully prepared to do that and expose everything that the United States government has made covertly inaccessible or inaccessible to the general public. And with this blizzard of lies, I think we can definitely accost the government by reading these documents into the record and literally bringing this to the forefront with any kind of media coverage that transpires as a result of any charges that would be brought against me. So, in a sense, if they do go ahead and charge me with anything related to this particular incident, they will be, I guess, in a sense, allowing all of the information to come forward in a court of law. And that's the challenge that I'm looking forward to if that does happen.
Do you think that the information, the two tracking documents, were sent in error? Because the letter and the documents tend to contradict themselves. Why send it to you and then tell you that you can't do anything with it?
Precisely. And that was brought up at one of the MUFON sites, I think the main MUFON headquarters site. They covered all the information that I had. I had a very long discussion with one of the representatives there. And what happened as a result of that posting of it, several people have written into MUFON, you know, in reference to replies and you know, comments to the statements that I had made. And one of the people who had wrote a comment said, could it be that NORAD, some clerk in NORAD, gave you that information incorrectly? And to be really honest with you, Jimmy, when I first read the, not necessarily the first couple of pages of the NORAD document, but as I read the air traffic control log, line by line, and people who are looking at it right now, you can see how difficult it is to read this particular air traffic control log. It's a second by second, minute by minute sort of tabulation of what the jets are doing at the time. And as I read down, at one point it said CF-18's time to target 90 seconds, and then the very next line, Jimmy, reads CF-18's make contact at 35,000 feet. And when I read that, I said to myself, is NORAD indicating that they've made contact with a track of unknown origin? And essentially, that's what they're saying. They made contact with something. Now, the way these things were tracked is very, very unusual, in that another medical evacuation jet was in the same area, and they actually caught visual sighting of these objects. So not only did the CF-18s catch these things on radar, a medical evacuation jet, an LR-35, also made visual contact with these things. And you've got to consider the fact that these things did, in some way, shape, or form, the CF-18s, that is, make some sort of contact. And why would NORAD state that, or at least not section it out, or at least redact it? There are many other spots in that document, as your listeners can look at and see. Many of the parts of it are, in fact, redacted. The first couple of pages are nearly 80% redacted. But that one line in the air traffic control log says contact made at 35,000 feet is not redacted. If there's anything that should be redacted, it's that. And that's what makes me think that I possibly got this document in error. They just let it slip. And, I mean, that's just an assumption on my part. I can't really speak for the government or NORAD as to why they did or didn't, you know, send this to me legitimately or in error. I can't make any judgment on that. But the fact of the matter is that they sent me documents that mentioned tracks of interest, TOIs, and unknown tracks. So the simple fact of the matter is, you know, I've got these documents and I've distributed them, and it appears that I'm in some sort of violation of what's going on with in terms of national security. I don't see any other way to look at it myself. I mean, if there's somebody out there who can point me in another direction and enlighten me as to why this is or is not the case, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, I've forwarded the documents to a fighter pilot, a friend of mine, and he's looking at them now, too, as well. Mm-hmm. But one thing that wasn't redacted was the last line of the letter, which clearly states, and I'm quoting here, the yearly average in the past 5 years has been 1,800 tracts of interest and 75 intercepts. Now, that's not redacted. That's there. How do we interpret a line like that in an official letter?
Well, I think that the one thing that the I think people have to understand is the way NORAD uses language. They use extremely deceptive and complex language in order to obfuscate the reality of what's really going on. That's the interpretation that I have.
Right.
And if your listeners actually sit down and read the letter from the North American Air Defense Command, NORAD Operations and Peterson Air Force Base in Colorado, if they read the letter, you've got to read it at least five or six times to really even come close to understanding what's going on in the letter. They've got all of these different kinds of short forms in it, very confusing verbiage that really doesn't make any sense, and you have to read it over and over and over again to actually get the meaning of what they're trying to say, or what they're not trying to say, or what they're trying to cover up. So that particular statement at the very end of the letter, and by the way, Jimmy, none of that letter has been redacted. It's a full letter. There's nothing there that has been cut out under Section 15, which means that you know, you are allowed to redact certain aspects of a document. This letter is total and completely done in full with no redaction at all. Now, that last paragraph saying that many 1,800 tracts of interest and 75 intercepts occurred over a five-year period. It's a yearly average. So what they're saying is 1,800 tracts of interest and 75 intercepts have occurred. Now, they don't call them UFOs. They don't call them UAPs. They don't call them unidentified flying objects. They call them tracts of interest. Now, what does that mean? Is that sort of a cover word for something else? You know, is there gun camera film of these things, of each one of these incidents when the CF-18s are scrambled? We just know that we don't know any of the answers to those questions at all in any way, shape, or form. So this letter, as far as I'm concerned, represents another attempt by the United States government and NORAD to just sort of present to us another blizzard of lies and obfuscation. And it's quite clear that their intention is to confuse the situation and not clarify the situation. So in making a statement like that, the commander says that he's, you know, he's approving the release of this kind of information. What does it really mean? Explain what that means. And in no way, shape, or form does he do that in that particular letter. So it would be up to me or someone else to look at that letter and then file another Freedom of Information request, or up here in Canada we call it Access to Information, another request to please clarify your last statement. And what is a tract of interest? And is there any gun camera evidence showing that your CF-18s in fact did capture visually or on radar an object of unknown origin? We need that clarified. And the whole process is like slogging through mud. And it's very, very difficult to get these people to say what they mean, or at least reveal the subtleties of what's really going on behind closed doors.
One of the things that I find interesting is at the top of the first tracking document that's stamped secret, on the very top line, it says visual on three unknown tracks. Mm-hmm. And next to it in the margin is a handwritten note that says three UFOs with an arrow pointing to that. And so it may not be redacted, but it certainly says three UFOs.
That's right. Yeah. Well, the scratching there in pencil or pen, that's me. I wrote that in myself.
I see. Okay.
That's me. It says that when I got the document, I did some pencil work on it. I said, here, these little highlights all the way down through it. And the edited parts, I'm looking at it right now, and that those are all my little scribblings indicating to me those are points of interest. But the actual fact is that Vancouver Center advises the track Z150 is visual on three unknown tracks. That's the NORAD statement. And then I put the three UFOs I just call them UFOs for my own reference.
Okay, let me jump in. We're going to take a break right here. Our guest tonight is Victor Vigiani, and we're talking about his NORAD document disclosure. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. We're going old school tonight. It's all UFOs all night long. We are disconnecting from the world. Our guest tonight is Victor Vigiani. And Victor, I just ask everybody to go over to the Coast website and look at this letter from Regina up in Canada in November 68. And while everybody's looking at that, I have to ask you, how in the heck did you get a hold of this document?
What, the RCMP document?
Yes.
Well, it was a rather long and tedious process. I think it was, I'm trying to think back, I think it was the year 2009 or 2010 when I inadvertently discovered that the Canadian government at a place called Library and Archives Canada, its own collection, has a compendium of 9,500 UFO files. And I just literally tripped over it. I had no idea that the Canadian government had this kind of compendium. And when you go to the site and you look and you type in UFOs, and there's four different sections as to how you can access the UFO files. There's the Ministry of there's the Department of Defense, the Transportation Department here in Canada, which governs all kind of things aerospace related, and the RCMP. And there's one other that's a different type. So you've got to look at each one of these sections of within Archives Canada, and you take them one section at a time, and that's where all of these 9,500 files are. So you go to the site, and you type in a date or a year, or you start with document number one in, let's say, the RCMP, and you just literally scroll through these documents, literally one by one. And it's like reading the telephone book, Jimmy. It's pretty boring stuff. Most of it is just citing reports. You know, Uncle Al and Aunt Martha are sitting on their porch in Saskatchewan, Manitoba, or wherever, and they see a bright light in the sky. They report it to the RCMP. They come out, they talk to these people, and they make a report on it, and nothing happens to the report. These things are just like just right through all of the archives, on and on and on. But every once in a while, you come up with a nugget, with a really nice little pearl. And some of them are specific to the Joint Intelligence Committee reports that the Canadian government has, letters by ministers of defense to citizens talking about UFOs, all different kinds of reports within that archive. And once I found out how to search through, because it really is a difficult task just searching through all this information, I found that I could be pretty specific about how I look for certain things. And when I found this document that's on there right now, that if your listeners are watching or looking at it, it's very specific about what it says with regard to a UFO found. The RCMP actually states in the letter a UFO has been found. And that is unprecedented information. It's just it's something that's totally amazing, and we don't understand exactly what they did with it, where they came up with it. And it says it right there in with what line you, it says 450 miles out of Prince Albert, the Manitoba border, a part of a vehicle that traveled in outer space. And this is, you know, long before anything else that we knew of, the shuttlecraft or anything like that. So, I mean, it was an amazing document. And I read it once again two or three times, and it's an admonition by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police that they had, in fact, discovered a vehicle that had traveled in outer space. I mean, it says it right there in the middle of the first paragraph. How much more descriptive can you be? Is it a mistake? Who knows? Is it an overestimation? Who knows? But the fact of the matter is, the RCMP, which is one of our leading intelligence communities, in addition to CSIS here in Canada, they do investigations about everything, and they would not state something like this unless they were sure of it.
What is going on in Canada? I mean, there are so many sightings up there. Your population is one-tenth of the United States, but yet you have more UFO activity per capita than just about any country in the world. What's going on?
Well, it's a very good question. I think what it is some of the things that are happening with respect to one of the organizations that does our national UFO report. They do a very thorough report on the number of sightings that happened in any given year. I think they've been doing this since about 1990. and they do a very thorough report. And I think it's not just a matter of collecting sightings, which they do in a very decent manner. And these are all sighting reports. These are not bona fide necessarily UFO sightings. They are all sort of things that people see in the sky, and they make a report of it. Now, we know that the percentage of these kinds of things that are seen in the sky that represent real, honest-to-goodness, off-world civilization craft of unknown origin, I would say it's, 5 in 100, maybe even 3 in 100. But the fact of the matter is people are seeing these things with a greater regularity, and now that we've got these video phones and we've got all kinds of equipment where people are just, they're looking up into the skies much more often now than ever before. And I think that's something that is really kind of taken over, especially in Ontario and Quebec. There's just a wave of interest up here that's unprecedented. That's one of the reasons why we held the hearing, to tap into that interest and to get people interested in the fact that not only are they seeing these things, but the government is hiding information about it. And once you bring that kind of confluence of information together, where people are actually seeing these things with their own eyes, and then sort of putting that together with other converging lines of evidence, Jimmy, that the government is in fact hiding this information with respect to some of the documents they have. I think when you look at it all together, there's a wave of interest here in Canada that is, I think, relentless. And we're becoming, I think, in a position to demand more from our media, not necessarily just from the government, but to demand more from our media to say, listen, there is something going on here, and you need to pay attention to it. And that's why I planned the hearing in the way that I did, because of this wave of interest that's going on here in Canada.
Yeah, that's interesting. You want to take a couple of phone calls?
Sure.
Let's go to west of the Rockies. Let's go to Tom up in Washington. Tom, welcome to Coast. You're up.
Hi, sir. How you doing?
Doing good, Tom. What do you have?
Well, I was just, this is just, you're going to old school. This happened in 1959. And, it was a little town called Granite Falls over on the coast. And my mother, she was a school teacher. My dad, 30-year military man, retired. And he was working night watchman at a shipyard. And I remember the time very well, because my mother never missed Lawrence Welk. And she'd sit there in her chair and correct papers. In our living room, we had picture windows on each side. And it was about September, because it was dark. It was just dark and that. I happened to look out the right picture window, and I said, boy, Mom, the moon's sure bright out there. And she looked up from her correction paper, and she said, no, the moon's on the other side. So I walked over, and the moon's there. I said, well, yeah. I said, what's this then? And she looks out, she says, oh, my God. So she gathered us all up. Now, Lawrence Welk just coming on. And we went out. We was elevated quite a bit above the road. We could see clearly over towards the Stillaguamish River. And it was about a half mile to the Stillaguamish River. That's how close this thing was. And it was probably 1,500 feet up above the river. And it was huge. I mean, like, this thing hadn't been, like, got 300 yards across or so,
Well, it was big enough for you to think it was the moon.
Yeah. And it was, it was in like layers, it's disc, but it was slanted layers, and like a bottom and then a top layer and then a third layer, and like windows around the thing, but you couldn't see through them. They were different colors and had lights, but not a sound. And we watched it, and it would hover, and then it would blink. It'd be up there another 1,000 feet, just so fast you wouldn't believe it. And then hover again, back and forth, and it kind of lower down over the river again. And then pretty soon it kind of shot up there about 2,000 feet. And then it tilted, And then you could really see the size of it. And then that thing shot off. I mean, it was gone. And there was just a little glow, never a sound. We thought we'd been out there for like 10 minutes, We come back in the house and Lawrence Welk was going off. We've been out there an hour. It was quite amazing, I'll never forget it, and that's from that day forward, I believed in UFOs, because I can still close my eyes and see exactly what that thing looked like.
Yeah, that's, Tom, thank you for the phone call, and absolutely, Tom is right, that's going totally old school in his description, but I got to throw that back to you, Victor. Mm-hmm. Typical, It's a typical sighting, one like I've had myself. And when you look over the reports and you read exactly what Tom has, you know, witnessed back in 57, it's pretty indicative of what's going on out there, isn't it?
Well, for sure. And that's one of the things that I wanted to address with you, Jimmy, tonight, because I'm prepared to release the rest of this NORAD document. There's still three more pages to go and one more letter from the Minister of Defense at the time when I addressed this issue with him about the NORAD documents. The Minister of Defense at the time was the Honorable Peter MacKay. He was the Minister of Defense in Canada at the time. And I threw 10 questions at him, and he sent me back a multi-page letter explaining, possibly explaining, in quotation marks, what this tracking event might have been, and a very inadequate and completely, as far as I'm concerned, ignorant manner. He had no idea what was going on, and the letter really represents something I think the Canadian public needs to know about with respect to the Minister's Defense being uninformed about what's going on in the skies. Because on page 90, the next page that I did not publish, it's very clear at 12:18, the CF-18s are in trail of a medical evacuation jet, as I mentioned earlier.
Right.
And then the medical evacuation jet reported that their aircraft could not keep up with them. And one dropped off 15 minutes ago, and the other two dropped off 2 minutes ago. The medical evacuation jet was chasing these things, and they could not keep it. The words are right there. The aircraft could not keep up with them. And it goes on to describe exactly what the jets did after that in terms of sanitizing the area and sweeping the area. So it's very interesting to note that another jet actually did pick up this information. And I'm going to be publishing that along with the letter from the minister to sort of reinforce the fact that the Canadian government is definitely hiding something, and the fact that their ministers of defense really don't know what they're talking about when it comes to UFOs.
Did he actually state directly that he didn't have any idea what you were referring to? He's the Ministry of Defense. That doesn't make any sense.
He could not find the document. He says it right in the letter, and I will be publishing the letter. It states that he was unable to locate the flight log control, the air traffic control flight log that I had. He was unable to locate it. And then he went on to describe a little bit more about the standardized procedures about scrambling of jets, etc. And then right towards the end of his letter, he said that in every instance of these scramblings of these jets, it turned out to be a small aircraft with a non-functioning transponder or a flock of birds.
Well, and what does that? Yeah, exactly. So what does that tell you when they send you documents? So the documents are real. They threaten you not to release the documents. So obviously the documents are real. Then he turns around and says, "I have no idea what you're talking about, and I can't find these documents." What's the message here?
Well, the message is quite clearly, as it possibly even sort of in a parallel sense with the United States Congress and the Senate, the elected officials, Jimmy, are totally out of touch with this. They have no idea what these military agencies are doing. They don't have a clue. They're not briefed on these things. They don't receive constant reports about them. They don't even know the nomenclature. They have no idea. They're depending on their staff to sort of bring them up to speed about what this stuff might be. And the staff has been instructed, is from what I can understand, to give the ministers of defense the least amount of information possible, because if they do begin to separate the information from their own documents, it lands up on the floor of the House of Commons, and people can actually ask questions during question period of the Minister of Defense once these documents are being public. And that's one of my goals, is I want the Minister of Defense on the floor of the House of Commons be asked questions by the opposition about what these documents really mean and how far out of the loop all of our ministers of defense and our elected officials really are. They are completely and totally and abjectly inconceivably ignorant about what's going on. And this is one of the reasons why we held the hearing, to bring this to the surface so that the media could start asking the right kind of questions and possibly get some questions asked on the floor of the House of Commons to bring this forward. So it becomes a part of an overall dialogue, Jimmy, about what's really going on in our skies. And the fact of the matter is, we do not control the skies over North America. It's quite evident that we have no control over what's going on in our skies. We'd like to think we do, but we do not.
I know that you have a relationship with the former Ministry of Defense, Paul Hellyer, and you, and he just spoke at your hearing. Mm-hmm. What does he say about ignorance? Was he ignorant to this as well? And would he have handled it differently if he could go back in time?
Well, an excellent question. I'm glad you asked that. I've spoken to Paul about this many, many times, both personally and in a public sense, in interviewing him, because I've interviewed Paul, I can't tell you how many times on up here on the radio. Paul, at the time, did admit that when he was Minister of Defense up here in Canada, he did receive documents about unidentified flying objects, whatever they might have been called at the time, UFOs or flying saucers was probably the better word at the time. And he did actually write letters to citizens who had wrote letters to him asking questions about it. But he didn't take it seriously. It was just something that was coming across his desk. He was not briefed on these things by the military, by the Air Force at the time. He had no idea what was going on. And his particular position on that was these things were just fictitious. There's really nothing to them. We have no information about the reality of these things. And that was the party line at the time. And he stuck to the party line. Now, would he have handled things differently if he knew then what he knows now? Absolutely. Knowing Paul, he definitely would, because he's done a complete 180 on this. And he has some very, very firm notions about not only what these things are, but how the government has hidden this information, not just in Canada, but in the United States and throughout Europe and South America.
Before I let you go, when are you going to release the second part of the documents?
Well, I've got some work to do to clarify a few things with my solicitor before I really kind of let the rest of this stuff out. It's not going to be nearly as provocative as the first couple, but I think it's going to be a clarification about the rest of the air traffic control document, citing the passage that I just gave to you. And then second of all, the letter from the Minister of Defense to me, and all the questions that I asked him and the way he avoided all the 9 questions, or rather 10 questions, and made up some sort of jargon about what was really going on and why he couldn't find the reports.
I have to jump in. We're at a network break, but let us know and we will post it and get it out there immediately. Thank you so much, Victor Vigiani. His website is Z-Land Communications. Just click on his name over on the Coast website. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. When I come back, Clifford Stone is with us.